This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 17th, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 308. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And on the Big Deal feature, my guest is Bill Viggers, author of the new book, Terry and Me, the Inside Story of Terry Fox's Marathon of Hope. The second part of a two-part interview with Terry Fox's wingman on what I say is the most important road trip in Canadian history. From the summer of 1980, the summer of hope is what Bill calls it. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Sunday, September 17th, the 43rd annual Terry Fox Run. Even if you didn't run, walk, or roll, you can still donate. Go to terryfox.org. Joining me on the podcast for a second week is Bill Viggers, author of Terry and Me, the inside story of Terry Fox's Marathon of Hope, published by Sutherland House. Bill Viggers was dispatched by his boss at the Canadian Cancer Society in Ontario to join Terry's team on the road in progress in New Brunswick in 1980. Bill didn't know it at the time, but it became the most important road trip in Canadian history, a road trip to battle and cure cancer. Here is the second part of my two-part feature interview with Bill Viggers, author of Terry and Me.
Now, I remember back in the summer of 1980, seeing the news, July 11th, 1980, the appearance with all the thousands and thousands of people at Toronto City Hall, Nathan Phillips Square. Terry met Daryl Sittler, the great Toronto Maple Leaf. That was definitely a turning point in the run because of the attention by the thousands of people, by the national media centered in Toronto. Was that the day that you felt that the country was paying attention, that Terry and the team realized that the country was paying attention, that there was momentum that was going to lift them up? Or was there another, did something else happen before or after that everyone said, we've got it, our team is motivated, we can do anything?
I think Toronto was the apex, but it actually started... It started first off when he crossed the border into Ontario. It went from day and night. He comes across the bridge at Porcs Hawkesbury, and there's a high school band playing. I'll still never forget why they picked that tune, but they're playing Georgie Girl. And to this day, I always smile as he's coming across the bridge, and there, if you know the song, "Hey there, Georgie Girl." And then when he did the kickoff of the football at the Ottawa game, and we were downstairs underneath the stands, and I think the field is still the same. And all that was, it was a hockey arena under there. And only the exit lights lit the place, and Terry's trying to kick at the ball, and he's afraid he's going to shank it or fall down. And they call him out onto the field, and I'm thinking to myself, I hope they know who he is. And he didn't even get to the sidelines when the announcer was, "Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome." And the place went crazy for about 5 minutes, a standing ovation. And then at center field, Jerry Organ and the football players, or Tony Gabriel, are talking to him and saying, you know, as professional athletes, they would never be able to do this. And then slowly between Ottawa and Toronto, there's a whole bunch of little towns. Probably the biggest one was 1,500 people. And every town you'd go to, there'd be 2,000 people. They all came in from the cottages. It was summertime. And it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then we did the Scarborough Civic Center, which I almost canceled. Thank goodness I didn't. And then we come down University Avenue. And I had met with a group of people right after I met Terry in New Brunswick and a radio station, a guy by the name of Jeremy Brown, and some, you know, pretty successful businessmen in Toronto. And all I had was a couple of Polaroids to show them that I had taken a picture of Terry out east, and told them that, you know, he was coming. And I didn't realize I was doing the biggest sales job of my life, But at the end of the meeting, they said, don't worry about Toronto. You take care of the rest of the province. So until we ran down University Ave, and it was lined 5-6 people deep on either side, people in the office buildings, in the doorways. And we're, by the way, we're passing all of the hospitals that now do research funded by Terry. And wasn't, if you know Toronto, there's a main intersection, University Ave and Queen Street, and you make a left-hand turn heading east, and literally as you go around the corner is Nathan Phillips Square, Toronto City Hall. And it is packed from the stage a block in every direction. And the roar of the people when Terry came, and it's echoing off of the skyscrapers. It's a sound I'll never forget. And we're trying to make our way through the crowd to get him up to the stage. And he gets up in the stage, and I can remember standing and staring up at this man. His name was Jeremy Brown. He was a radio station announcer in Toronto. He was the guy that said, leave it to us, we'll make it happen. And I can remember staring, because I was down in the crowd. I didn't ever go up on stage. And I'm looking up and I'm going, Jeremy, you pulled it off. You really did. And I think that's when I knew. I think Terry, all of us knew. When you see Terry at Toronto City Hall and the smile on his face, the two things you notice. One, he knows his message has gotten out. Number two, there's a scene where his dad takes his arm and holds it up sort of like as a champion, and Terry immediately pulls it down. And he did not like being called a hero. He did not like that reference. As a matter of fact, when he got sick in Thunder Bay, he was concerned that people had put him up on a pedestal and maybe lost sight of why he was doing the run.
What was the biggest logistical nightmare of the run?
Believe it or not, the biggest logistical nightmare of the run was some individuals within the Canadian Cancer Society who were supposed to be following a schedule and weren't, and made him run out of his way, made him in one instance do two events that were 30 miles apart. He got no dinner that night. That incident caused great friction between Terry and I. As a matter of fact, they had come up and said, if he doesn't go to the second event, you're going to be off the run and we're probably going to fire you. And to which I had to tell Terry what the situation was. And he threw his sandwich at me. I brought his clubhouse sandwich and his fries in. And I was apologetic. I should have been. I blame myself because I should have been on top of it. I should have known that we had already dealt with this gentleman once before, that he might pull something like this. Nonetheless, we didn't speak for a couple of days. When we did make up, there was a point where inside my head and my heart, although I'd only been working for the Cancer Society for less than 6 months, 4 months, and at that time I really needed the job. I really needed the job. But there came a point during the run, and I decided I'm working for Terry. I'm not working for the Cancer Society anymore. So I began to basically ignore National, because there was a complete disconnect about what was happening on the road and what was happening in downtown Toronto. So they were asking him to do stuff that there's no way he was going to do. And they'd send me the messages to, well, tell him to do this. I'd go, yeah, okay. I wouldn't tell him. I just ignore him. So needless to say, I was not the most popular guy with some individuals at the Cancer Society, although not my bosses. I had two bosses. One was a guy by the name of Harry Rollins, and he was staff. He was the executive director, very smart man. He was a Bell executive and a good people person. And my other boss was a volunteer, and a guy by the name of Ron Potter from London, Ontario. And he was an insurance executive. And I always referred to him. He was a leader of men. People, he hardly spoke, but when he did, it was always calm and it was always intelligent, and he was always able to sway people. And between those two people, swaying a meeting in Toronto at the last minute, the Cancer Society may not have even been involved with Terry. So the crisis were lack of understanding within the organization itself. And And I just got to the point where I just ignored them all the time. I've never been really good on following rules to begin with. Just ask my grade 9, my grade 10, my grade 11 teachers, who all liked me so much they kept me for an extra year.
What were the moments of pure magic that stand out after all these years? Is there one moment that really stands out?
The day with the young amputee up in Terrace, Greg Scott, that Terry had met in Hamilton, and he had the same osteosarcoma that Terry had the other opposite leg amputated. And I was able to arrange to fly him up to run with Terry. And Terry, and once again, that's in the documentary and it's in the book, the story about how Terry, this young boy, inspired Terry. Terry called it the most inspirational 2 days of the entire run. That was a magic moment. The magic moments came, a lot of the time it came not on the road, but after, and particularly during dinner. At the end of the day, and this was usually the routine in Ontario, even the policemen that we may go through two policemen, maybe one policeman all day, but at the end of the day, the policeman would join us, the district director, my kids, Doug and Darryl, and it was always a joyous occasion having dinner. On the odd occasion, Terry was, not feeling good, but I would say 98% of the time, dinner time was always a good time. By the way, we had the odd, maybe it wasn't odd, maybe more than that odd is not food fights in the restaurants, but we had a number one rule. You cannot get food on the restaurant, the table, the floors, or the walls. So my favorite story is, and we're in a Chinese restaurant, and anyway, Daryl reaches over and pulls the front of Terry's shorts open and takes the soy sauce bottle, and like he was splashing vinegar, just for about 15 seconds, just sits there shaking the bottle into Terry's pants. And Terry just sits there with a smile on his face, and he puts it down, and then Terry has a bite, and then Terry reaches over and he picks up a bowl of sweet and sour sauce, opens up Daryl's shorts, and just slowly pours it down the front of his shorts. And it was silliness. It was teenage silliness. And I heartily condoned it.
What one moment of pure magic that that Canadians experienced going through those emotions? I mean, when we found out September 1st, 1980, that Thunder Bay, he couldn't continue on because of the cancer returning. But then the moment of pure magic was how Canadians rallied around him, how the major media outlets started essentially the telethon, the Marathon of Hope became a major fundraising event, and people began to run in Terry's memory. That's a moment of pure magic that stands out for Canadians. But you were there on that day, September 1st, 1980. What was it like to be on the inside when that happened? And then how did the team turn that around? And how did the team react as you saw the outpouring of support from Canadians?
I'll address the day itself. It was devastating. It hit all of us like a rock. I think Terry realized that he had a problem long before it came to fruition. But I was actually at my mom and dad's 40th wedding anniversary in St. Thomas. I flew up. I arrived at the same time as mom and dad did from the West Coast. We went to the hospital, went into his hospital room. Terry himself broke the news that the cancer was back. And then we were told that he had to fly home immediately, because his lungs, one of his lungs was filling with fluid. And if he didn't fly out laying down all the way to Vancouver, he'd be stuck in Thunder Bay for a week. So I went into all my emotions shut down, and I just became, let's get this done. And we immediately flew out, Doug and Daryl, and I should have let them stay around and empty the van the next day so that they could have some closure. But I was just thinking of getting everybody home. Meanwhile, we're talking to Ontario Health, and we've already tried the Toronto Star and a few corporate, trying to get a private jet to fly him home, and nobody can come through. And this gentleman by the name of Lou Fine, who is a district director from Sudbury North, a man who does not mince words, he's got OHIP on the line, and he says, we need a plane to fly Terry Fox home. And they go, well, who's going to pay for it? And Lou said, you are. Well, we can't do that. And it went up the chain. And finally, he says to the last person who is still saying, we can't do that, I've got all of the media of Canada standing outside my door. Do you want me to walk out there right now and tell them that you won't fly Terry Fox home? One moment, sir. And 30 seconds, they're back on the line, and there'll be a plane there in an hour and a half. The hard part was the ride to the airport. Terry gave that speech, and then I got into the ambulance with mom and dad and the doctor and Christy Blatchford, who was a reporter from the Toronto Star, who had become very close with Terry. And as we're riding out to the airport, his dad's going, this isn't fair. This is not fair. And Terry goes, why, Dad? And he said, the cancer. And he said, Dad, I'm no different than anybody else. He said, this is what cancer is all about. Maybe now people will understand why I was doing it, because he knew people were going to watch him go through that treatment. And I was lucky enough to be flown out by CTV for the telethon. And the first night I slept in his room because he was in the hospital, and the room was piled high with boxes of all the things that people had given to him along the road. And then that night watching the telethon where they raised, I think they hit over $10 million. And I watched most of it with Terry and Doug and Daryl. And then Doug and Daryl, his brother and his best friend, they go downstairs because I want them to do some media. And they roll in the bag and they start the drip for chemotherapy with Terry, and he fell asleep on my shoulder. And I worked for the Cancer Society, but I didn't know what cancer was. I had never had anybody go through it. And I, like the rest of Canada, spent the next 8 or 9 months on that journey with Terry, to which he said, I'm not disappointed. I did the best I possibly could. I couldn't have done any better. And maybe the run will continue. And by the way, right after he got sick, Isadora Sharp, who was the president of Four Seasons, who was a big supporter, sent Terry a telegram. Back those days, you sent telegrams. And Izzy said, I'm going to organize an annual run in your name on the third Sunday of September every year. And this year, 43 years later, please, folks, if you're listening, read the book, get inspired again, find Terry's hope and his legacy, and get out and keep the fight against cancer going.
Of all the places that you can be running or walking this year, Bill, where are you going to be?
This year, I've been there twice before. I haven't been there for a few years, but I'm going to be in Victoria. I lived in Victoria for 5 years when I first moved to the West Coast. They have an amazing organizational team over there. They have a statue at Mile Zero in Victoria, very similar to the statue that's Mile Zero in St. John's. He did make it coast to coast. So I'm really looking forward to that. And then they also do a head shave. And the first year I was there, it was really neat because there was maybe 100 people there, but they were going to do a head shave fundraising, and maybe 4 or 5 people had showed up to get their hair cut. And I'm standing there thinking, this is before the run starts. Too bad there's not more people. Well, first one fire truck pulls up, then another fire truck pulls up, then another 4 fire trucks pull up from the different communities of Esquimalt, Victoria, Fairfield, Sydney, and I'm sure there's somebody left back at one of the stations, but there had to be 20 firemen all get off, come over, and all of them had raised money and all of them had their head shaved for Terry. So I'm actually going to be shaving somebody's head this year. I haven't got much left. They'd save mine, but there's not that much left. Then on the day after the run, I'm actually I'm going to be at a place called Russell Books, which is the largest independent bookstore in Canada, in Victoria. doing a book signing.
That was Bill Viggers, author of Terry and Me, the inside story of Terry Fox's Marathon of Hope, published by Sutherland House. Again, you can donate to cancer research. Go to terryfox.org. What do you think? Email bob@thebreaker.news.
News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In the Taiwan news, Taiwan rebukes Elon Musk's claim that it is an integral part of China. Foreign Minister Joseph Wu points out Musk's X is banned in China. During an interview on the All In podcast, Musk denied having any business ties in China beyond his Tesla car sales and factory. Musk claimed that the crux of strained relations between Washington and Beijing is Taiwan. The tech tycoon then said the conflict between China and Taiwan is, quote, analogous to Hawaii or something like that, end quote. He then alleged that Taiwan is an, quote, integral part of China that is arbitrarily not part of China, end quote. Wu suggested that Musk, quote, listen up and declare that Taiwan is not part of the PRC and certainly is not for sale. In Kyoto news, new Foreign Minister Yoko Kamikawa says Japan must engage with China. Kamikawa assumed the post at a critical time when Japan-China relations are strained by the dispute over the release of treated radioactive wastewater from the now-defunct Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant in northeastern Japan into the Pacific Ocean, which started on August 24th. Quote, Japan and China are facing many challenges and matters of concern, but it is important for Japan to say what we should say, call on China to act responsibly, engage in dialogue, and then work together on common challenges, the 70-year-old said. In Hong Kong Free Press, Hong Kong welcomed 4.1 million visitors in August, but arrivals still below pre-pandemic figures. The tourism board said the recovery of the city's tourism industry was steady, but blamed, quote, currency exchange rates, airline capacity, and the global economic outlook as factors affecting the pace of the tourism reboot. In August 2018, the city saw nearly 6 million visitors, and even during the height of the pro-democracy protests and unrest in August 2019, the city welcomed 3.59 million arrivals. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler says he will not seek a third term. Wheeler made the announcement in a letter shared by his office and addressed to city residents. In it, the 61-year-old touted what he said was his administration's success in wrangling Portland's Byzantine and bedeviling government to better confront the crises that have worsened under his watch. He launched his first city hall run in late 2015 with a pledge to provide a safe place to sleep for every person living on Portland's streets by his second year in office. Wheeler also vowed to tackle the city's rapidly growing affordable housing crisis and advance a sweeping series of police reforms. Few of those plans came to fruition. In King 5, Seattle, here's why Washington Public Schools have lost thousands of students since COVID-19 pandemic. The five largest school districts in Washington have reported dips in enrollment since the beginning of the pandemic. Public school enrollment in Washington State statewide has dropped by more than 60,000 students. Instead, many families have chosen to enroll their children in private or home school. In the Times Colonist, the rainbow conundrum at University of Victoria, crosswalk refresh, no simple paint job. UVic has said any repainting of the rainbow crosswalk will have to wait until it holds conversations with staff, faculty, and students. It is spending $24,000 on those consultations. University staff planned on giving the crosswalk, meant to celebrate the LGBTQ community, a fresh coat of paint in September 2020, 5 years after it was first painted. LGBTQ students and recent alumni have been offered a $55 Skip the Dishes gift card as compensation for the two-hour virtual consultation event.
That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate, so you won't stand alone, you won't stand alone.
you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to doctors, nurses, parents, and others who are working to support children suffering from cancer, the children who are bravely battling cancer, and the scientists who are searching for cures. September is Childhood Cancer Awareness Month in BC. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
You do, and they don't think you know, but I know that you do, cause your dollar ain't shit, and it's taxed to no end, cause the rich men, north of rich men.
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 17th, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 17th of September in 1976, the Space Shuttle Enterprise was unveiled? The prototype for the Space Shuttle program is now on display at the Intrepid Museum in New York. Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. That is the best way to keep up with the Breaker.News, while Facebook refuses to show Canadian news to Canadians because of the Trudeau Liberal government's Bill C-18. For news as it happens, you can follow the Breaker News on Twitter, also known as X, and if you're outside of Canada, visit the Breaker.News on Facebook. You can support the Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.